Yes. And he was the creator of Bootsy, a very famous cartoon. And he was my father's best friend to the end. My father used to tell Ollie, the apartment is bugged. It's bugged. And Ollie used to laugh at my father. This was in Paris at the end.
Julia, we just have 20 seconds.
And Ollie would laugh and say, "No, no way. You're being paranoid, Richard." But Richard insisted, so Ollie brought technicians in, and they found bugs.
Well, so, we're going to we have to leave it there. But people can pick up this latest book of the great literary giant Richard Wright. Thank you so much to his daughter, Julia Wright, The Man Who Lived Underground, just published. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're tuned to listener-supported community radio KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closures of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, appointments are no longer needed for vaccinations at the Oregon Convention Center or the airport. Groups will converge in Tacoma this weekend to support detained immigrant mothers. And the Tigard police are being outfitted with the latest body camera technology. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 7th, 2021. I'm Nat Moon. Yesterday, the Oregon Health Authority announced 763 new cases of COVID-19 and 5 additional deaths, bringing the state's death toll to 2,514 people. The OHA also identified at least 611 COVID cases and 8 deaths among residents who have received either the Pfizer, Moderna, or Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Authorities pointed out that although no vaccine is perfect, the low number of breakthrough infections is very small, showing how effective all 3 vaccines are. As of Thursday, 1,350,000 Oregonians have been fully vaccinated and 1,900,000 have received at least one dose. As of today, all Oregon counties have moved out of the extreme risk category for COVID restrictions. As a result, limited indoor dining can resume throughout the state, and businesses such as gyms, museums, theaters, and retail stores will be able to increase their capacity. However, the governor and state health authority officials have updated the guidelines. The high-risk category now allows restaurants and bars a maximum capacity of 10% or 50 people, whichever is larger. Previously, it allowed 25% or 50 people, whichever was smaller. Following Multnomah County's return to the high-risk level on Friday, fans will be allowed into the Moda Center for the first time since the pandemic started last spring. Tickets for the Portland Trailblazers game against the LA Lakers went on sale Thursday, with seats available to only a couple thousand fans to stay in line with the 10% capacity limit. In a statement, Oregon Governor Kate Brown said, quote, "Let me be clear. Across the state, COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are still high, and Oregon is not out of the woods yet." Starting today, Oregonians can get vaccinations without an appointment. The mass vaccination site at the Oregon Convention Center and the OHSU mass vaccination site at the Portland Airport will begin offering COVID-19 vaccinations to people who walk or drive in without an appointment. That means all Oregonians 16 and older can now get a COVID-19 vaccine without scheduling an appointment. The Oregon Convention Center provides vaccinations between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. and is staffed and able to give up to 8,000 vaccinations per day. It will be closed this weekend due to Mother's Day, but will return to normal operating hours on Monday, May 10th. The OHSU mass vaccination site at the Portland Airport is also offering drive-up vaccinations this weekend with no appointment necessary. Simply show up at the PDX Airport Red Economy parking lot between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. on Saturday and 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sunday to receive your shot. If you prefer, you can schedule an appointment to receive an OHSU vaccination online or by calling 833-647-8222. Oregon health officials have confirmed that over 70 people associated with the People's Church in Salem have been stricken with COVID-19. The non-denominational Assemblies of God Church was one of 9 Oregon churches that joined a lawsuit filed by the Pacific Justice Institute to overturn Governor Brown's COVID-19 restrictions. They argued that restrictions on churches violates constitutional protections for religious freedom. Marion County has been in either the high or extreme risk category for months, requiring people to remain 6 feet apart and wear masks, just like the rest of the state. According to the church's Facebook page, lead pastor Scott Erickson and his wife Bonnie were both hospitalized with COVID-19 in April. In mid-April, executive pastor Tom Murray encouraged attendees to physically distance and stay home if ill. But a recent posting of photos shows members not wearing masks or maintaining social distancing. Groups from Oregon and Washington will converge at the Tacoma Immigrant Detention Center this weekend to support immigrant mothers in detention. For more on the story, here's Eric Tegedoff of the Oregon News Service.
A Northwest car caravan is heading to an immigration detention center this weekend to support mothers who've been detained there. Groups from Oregon and Washington are driving to the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma on Saturday and calling on members of Congress from both states to stop transferring people to the facility. Pedro Sosa, based in Salem, directs the Project Voice Immigrant Rights Program for the Quaker organization American Friends Service Committee. He says caravan participants are bringing letters to the detained mothers.
This is the message from the community, a message for peace, a message for love and hope. We know that many women are in detention and they can't have or don't have the opportunity to celebrate Mother's Day with their children.
The caravan is part of the American Friends Service Committee's National Free Them All campaign. Other organizations involved in the event include faith, medical, and human rights groups. House Bill 1090, signed into law by Washington Governor Jay Inslee last month, bans privately owned detention centers there. The Geo Group-owned facility in Tacoma is the only privately owned center in the state. it will be allowed to stay open through the end of its contract, which expires in 2025. Sosa is against the for-profit detention model.
It's important for us because that's a human being. It's not right someone makes profit on your suffering.
In January, President Joe Biden announced the federal government would phase out the use of private prisons, but exempted immigration detention centers. However, at a speech this week in Georgia, Biden said he's considering similar action on immigration facilities as well. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The city of Portland has refused to release an independent audit of the city's Office of Community and Civic Life, and the city's attorney's office has been accused of violating Oregon's public records law. The audit was the result from a series of employee complaints to the Bureau of Human Resources. Willamette Week, Oregon Public Broadcasting, and the Portland Tribune were among the news organizations that were turned down. Grievances were said to include bullying, unethical hiring and contracting processes, harassment, and retaliatory behavior. According to a report, the complaints came from a broad range of both supervisors and staff. The audit was conducted by the ASCETA consulting firm and has now been completed and submitted to the city, but the city attorney's office has claimed attorney-client privilege and refused public records requests. Paul Leisner is a former employee who is now a senior fellow at the PSU Center for Public Service at the Hatfield School of Government. In a statement, he said, quote, "Allowing the city attorney to withhold this important review of the behavior as civic life serves not justice for the people victimized, but rather to help the city prevent community members from understanding the full extent of the governance and management failures in city government." In June of 2020, Oregon created the Landlord Compensation Fund. The objective was to provide three rounds of payments to prevent a wave of evictions when the moratorium expired, and to help struggling landlords by compensating them for unpaid rent. Under the plan, landlords would receive 80% of the back rent owed by tenants if they agreed to forgive the remaining 20%. The only problem was that the fund would not cover rents by tenants who have moved out since the start of the pandemic but still owed back rent. A spokesperson for Multifamily Northwest says this left out a huge number of people who need help. So according to State Representative Pam Marsh, the rules have been changed for the third round of payments, which will open in June. She said landlords will now have an opportunity to be funded when, quote, "A tenant has moved out of their home, is still accessible, still willing to sign over a declaration form, and to provide an address." Estimates are that Oregon landlords have been left with as much as $50 million in unpaid rent just from vacated units. And while many worry that the fund is not nearly big enough to help everyone that needs it, Marsh said, quote, "We have a bunch of federal money that's coming that will add to the pot, so with the federal money, with the state money, I'm hopeful that we can take care of a lot of that need." Oregon progressive groups and the state's public employees unions have announced a joint effort to get an anti-walkout initiative on the 2022 ballot. The No More Costly Walkouts campaign comes in response to repeated walkouts by Republican state senators who have used the tactic to prevent climate change, gun safety, and vaccination legislation. The state's constitution requires that two-thirds of the lawmakers must be present to introduce or vote on a bill. And although the Democrats hold the majority in both chambers, Republican walkouts have effectively brought legislative proceedings to a halt. The anti-walkout campaign is considering eight potential initiative proposals, including deterrence such as daily fines and taking away a lawmaker's salary, per diem, and expense reimbursement. Initiative Petition 14 would punish lawmakers with fines and amend the Oregon Constitution to prohibit a representative or senator who boycotts multiple sessions from running for re-election. Patty Wentz of the No More Costly Walkouts campaign said the group is very serious about the initiatives and promised that there will be measures about gridlock on the ballot in November 2022. The group will assess voter support for the 8 initiative proposals and pursue signature gathering. The Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals has rejected a dredging request sought by the developers of the Jordan Cove Energy Project. Developer Pembina had hoped to build a natural gas liquefaction plant and export terminal at Jordan Cove, 7 miles inland from the mouth of the Coos Bay estuary. The Coos County Board of Commissioners had approved a request to widen the channel, but the decision was challenged by conservation groups and tribes who said that the permits were illegally issued. The Land Use Board agreed and overturned the locally issued permits. The state of Oregon also denied the permits under the Clean Water Act and the Coastal Zone Management Act. Philip Johnson of Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition said the decision will be a major barrier to the Jordan Cove project. He said, quote, LUBA has upheld the regulations that protect estuaries in Oregon, and we don't think the Jordan Cove scheme can get around them. We hope that Pembina will accept the reality that Jordan Cove should never be built. In a statement, representatives from Pembina said that the company has paused the project, quote, in light of current regulatory and political uncertainty. In a move that drew unanimous support from the City Council and Public Safety Advisory Board, the Tigard Police Department has decided to outfit all sworn officers with body cameras. Patrol vehicles have had dashboard cams, and about 10% of officers have been wearing body cameras for about a decade. But the current system is obsolete, and a new system will be installed department-wide. The new system will cost about $1.5 million, and according to Sergeant Lee Erickson, it will not need to be manually operated. Erickson said that drawing a firearm or activating a taser will automatically turn on the camera. He said, quote, it's integrated to our in-car systems. If we activate our emergency lights, like to get through traffic or to initiate a traffic stop, it'll turn the cameras on. If we get in a crash, it'll turn all the cameras on. Videos are then uploaded to a cloud server and cannot be edited or deleted. The Portland Police Bureau has been discussing body cameras since 2019, but has not moved forward, citing funding limitations. Portland is one of a shrinking number of major American cities that still isn't using police body cameras. Listening to the KABU Evening News. Coming up next, at 5:30, it's Counterspin. At 6, it's Let's Talk About Race. Then at 7, it's Rising Up with Sana Lee. Tonight, it'll be mostly cloudy with temperatures in the low to mid 40s and the chance of a passing shower. Tomorrow, we can likely expect a mostly cloudy day with a high near 60. On this day in 1824, Beethoven's 9th symphony, the Choral Symphony, premiered in Vienna, Austria. He stood near the podium but did not conduct because he was deaf by that time. He was not aware of the audience's thunderous applause until he turned around. Today's quote is from Beethoven, who said, quote, "To play a wrong note is insignificant. To play without passion is inexcusable." Virginia Senator Tim Kaine is working with President Joe Biden to expand the Pell Grant program to support certificate programs. The proposed changes would increase the support by an additional $400 and also cover DACA students. For more on the story, here's Diane Bernard with the Public News Service.
As more workers need training to enter the post-pandemic economy, Virginia Senator Tim Kaine and President Joe Biden are proposing expanding the Pell Grant program to reach more students in need. Kaine's Jobs Act bill would let students use Pell Grants for short-term certificate programs, and the president's budget plan would increase Pell Grant amounts by $400 and allow DACA students to receive them for the first time. Kristen Westover, president of Virginia's Mountain Empire Community College, says the grants are a major support for her college, and expanding them would give a much-needed boost to students who often struggle to pay for tuition.
Over two-thirds of our students received some form of Pell support, and almost that same number are either underrepresented or economically challenged. And I'm extremely happy that it will fund those DACA students as well.
She believes it's important to expand higher education for undocumented students, and since last year, they've been eligible for in-state tuition in Virginia. More than 450,000 undocumented immigrants are enrolled in U.S. colleges and universities, and about half are DACA recipients, according to research by the group New American Economy. Westover points out these proposals are part of a national trend to make post-secondary education more widely available. She says research shows many people who might not attend college are attracted to shorter-term training programs that can lead them to expanded training or a lifetime of learning.
We know in this day and age that learning is something that we won't be able to get away from in terms of the rapid pace of technology increases and our need for the workforce to keep up with those continually, not just in the beginning of their employment.
But some policymakers oppose using Pell Grants for certificate courses, saying it might track students into programs that lead to low-paying jobs. More than half of employed adults with short-term certificates earn $30,000 or less per year, according to data from the nonprofit New America. For Public News Service, I'm Diane Bernard.
Joe Biden visited Louisiana yesterday after Oregon's Jeff Merkley and Louisiana's Bill Cassidy asked the president to provide more support for disaster recovery. And a study by the University of Washington says that the U.S. may have drastically undercounted deaths related to COVID-19. With more on those stories and others, here's Nadia Ramlagan with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
You know, I know the times have been tough here. The damage of the hurricanes has been devastating.
President Joe Biden visited Lake Charles, Louisiana, and toured areas still recovering from two hurricanes last year. Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy, along with Oregon Democrat Jeff Merkley, have asked the White House to provide more disaster assistance after recent hurricanes, floods, and winter weather. Biden also said the administration is pivoting from COVID-19 to his Rebuilding America infrastructure plan.
Rebuilding in a way that it has resilience. And the folks who are going to rebuild it, those folks right over there, unions, we're going to rebuild it in a way that we're going to provide good jobs.
In Rhode Island, Vice President Kamala Harris described the results of getting people vaccinated.
You can see around the country how that is having an impact on businesses reopening, on getting back to some semblance of what we remember as normalcy.
A study from the University of Washington says we've badly underestimated the number of people killed by the pandemic. They say COVID-19 may have killed as many as 900,000 Americans. In Washington, D.C., Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Joint Chiefs Chair Mark Milley discussed the planned withdrawal from Afghanistan and a new independent review commission on sexual assault in the military. Milley said he is confident they can meet the president's time frame for removing U.S. troops.
As you know, we've been transferring steadily functions and responsibilities to the Afghan security forces for a considerable amount of time. The President of the United States has given us a window to be complete no later than September.
Austin also talked about their efforts to address domestic terrorist ideology within the military.
Clearly, we have a lot of work to do, and I want to be blunt. There is no place for hatred or bigotry or extremist behavior in this department or in the military.
Meanwhile, states are bracing for redistricting battles as they await the results of the 2020 census. Michelle Davis with Legislative Services for the Maryland General Assembly says the data has been slow coming.
And the delay in the redistricting data comes from a couple of things. Most of it is COVID. This is going to be about 4 months delay.
Full census data is expected to be delivered to states by September 30th. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson has signed a law strengthening privacy for people who donate to charities. Jarek Adams with the website Ballotpedia says it could allow nonprofits involved in politics to funnel so-called dark money into campaigns anonymously.
If you donate to a nonprofit that is heavily involved in politics and your donations to that nonprofit are not disclosed, you have sort of disproportionate influence without any of the accompanying accountability that comes with making a donation to a candidate.
For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Nadia Ramlagan. Thanks for listening.
The Blackfeet Nation in Montana is nearly 100% vaccinated against the coronavirus and has begun offering vaccinations to tribal and non-tribal residents in Montana and Alberta. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Some U.S. tribal nations are offering COVID-19 aid across international borders, the Mountain West News Bureau's Savannah Marr reports.
The Blackfeet Nation in Montana estimates that 98% of its adult residents are fully vaccinated, and it's been offering shots to non-natives in the broader community for weeks. So the tribe has opened up vaccine eligibility to Canadians. It hosted a vaccine clinic on the international border for hundreds of Blackfeet Confederacy citizens and other residents of Alberta. About 1,000 miles south, another tribe is providing international aid. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez says the nation is sending masks and other protective equipment to India as it faces a devastating surge.
They are going through some very, very difficult times right now, and we are willing to assist. And we also challenge other jurisdictions around the country to do the same.
Nez says at the height of the Navajo Nation's coronavirus surge, the tribe received aid from overseas, including more than $500,000 from Irish citizens. He says the tribe is now paying it forward.
That was Savannah Marr. On Thursday, Native American Assembly member James Ramos led lawmakers in a Serrano blessing song at the California State Assembly in Sacramento.
And today is very important because we're also honoring all those missing and murdered Native American women throughout the state of California and the nation, and honoring their families of those that still are looking for closure. But also, this song is offering up to the legislature on anything that you might be going through. Hey, Shamara, Hakape, Avum, Avum. Hey, Shamara, Hakape, Avum, Avum.
Following the song, the assembly approved a resolution introduced by Ramos designating May as California Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls Awareness Month. He has led hearings on the issue, and his legislation approved last year authorized funding for the State Justice Department to assist local and tribal law enforcement, improve collaboration among tribes, and sponsor a study with focus on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. The resolution to recognize the Awareness Month was unanimously approved. The Oneida Nation in Wisconsin held a tobacco burning ceremony this week as the tribe and community continued to respond and heal from the recent deadly shooting at the Oneida Casino Complex in Green Bay. The ceremony was held outside the casino for community members and gaming employees. Prior to the ceremony, a cultural leader explained the significance during a live stream by the tribe.
It's also that we don't forget, but that we heal our feelings from this occasion. And that we gather a feeling, all of us together, that from this day forward, we say we make our steps to a new beginning, a new way of looking at our community, because we've gone through a very hard time.
The entire complex was also smudged. The tribe's holding a tobacco burning for the greater Oneida community this weekend at its powwow grounds. Last Saturday, a gunman shot and killed two people and injured a third before being shot and killed by police. The gaming facility reopened to the public on Thursday. The University of Oregon's annual Mother's Day powwow will be held virtually for the second year in a row due to COVID-19 safety precautions. The celebration, in its 53rd year, is hosted by the Native American Student Union. organizers hope for an in-person event to take place next year. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Scientists who are also mothers have banded together to support mothers concerned with climate change. For more on that, here's Dr. Anthony Lizowitz with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. 66% of Americans are worried about global warming. Among moms, that number is even higher.
We know that climate change is a threat to all people, and in particular our kids.
Melissa Bird has a young daughter, and she's a climate scientist at Colorado State University. She says that although many moms are worried about global warming, many do not feel equipped to take action.
They don't have the resources to understand the climate issue completely and aren't sure what they can actually do to tackle it.
So Bird and a group of other women scientists teamed up to create a campaign called Science Moms.
Moms tend to trust other moms, and we as scientists want to be that credible, neutral messenger to educate moms, to inspire moms, and really empower them to use their voices.
On its website, the Science Moms group provides short videos, debunks climate myths, and offers ways to get involved. For example, it includes a sample letter to send to a member of Congress. Bert says the website is designed for moms.
But we want all parents to have a better understanding of what climate change is all about, and then get all people to really want to take action in that way.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Friday, May 7th, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell, Antonia Gonzalez, Diane Bernard, Nadia Ramlagan, and Eric Tegedoff. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is Otto. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on